Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency? Yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter. Nope. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, March the 12th, and we're broadcasting live from the studios in Redding, California at KCNR. My name's Christy.
And I'm Linda Kitt.
And, hey.
And we got a producer in there, I think.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Liam.
He's sporting those specs, and they look great on him.
No, I had no idea that I was blind and how blind I was until I put these things on, and I could see the leaves.
It's a new person.
And the flowers.
Yeah, those trees do
I can
have
read,
some leaves
I can read
them.
Street signs, and I can see the lines on the road.
That's great. Yeah, and you could find those little second tickers on some of the cut-ins and cutouts.
There you go, yeah.
Exactly.
I can do my paint by numbers now.
Yeah. I could do my job here. Okay. Well,
I can do my job. I can find the buttons and everything now.
You can always find our archive shows at tokensradioshow.com. And you can find us on Twitter and Telegram at Tokens Radio Show. That's at Tokens Radio Show. And it would be really good to just turn the phone off, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. And if you'd like to call in and chat with us, our phone number is 530-605-4567. And the chat room is open. Let me go check it out.
It is.
Yep. There you go. So very good. So the market's been pretty bumpy, and we're going to
yes,
be talking
it has.
About. In fact, it's changed the whole dynamics of the show today. Currently, Bitcoin is recovering a bit. It's at 21,460. Ethereum's at 1558. XRP is at 36, and XLM is at 8 cents, and all four of those three went up, and one went down. The one that went down is XRP.
Yeah, so, very interesting.
Yeah.
All right,
so we have a sponsor.
We do. This portion of the show is sponsored by Pearson Construction. Pearson Construction Excavation and Fire Cleanup are your post-fire cleanup and storm damage experts. With wildfires and winter storms continuing to devastate Northern California each year, their mission is to help fire and storm victims with all stages of post-fire cleanup, storm damage repair, and construction. We work with your insurance and county building division to guide you through every step of the process. Pearson Construction has been as an all-inclusive builder, taking our clients' projects from beginning to end. They draw your building plans, pull your county permits, and prepare your building site, including all necessary underground work. Then we make all your dreams come true. Building your custom dream home, including your barn. Contact Luke Pearson at Pearson Construction, Excavation, and Fire Cleanup at 530-605-9575 or at lpearsonconstruction.com.
You know, that's huge that they will work with the insurance company. That's
and the building permit.
Yeah, you know, it takes me back. We had a fire next door in an old house in the Bay Area, and the insurance fraud that was going on there was incredible.
They
had contractors coming in there and basically ripping off the insurance company. They would do some work, get paid a little bit, and then leave, and the job was not complete. And then finally, there was a fire investigation that it was there initially from the beginning, but then as it was concluded, they had found out, you know, some of the shenanigans that was going on there, and eventually got it resolved. It took about a year and a half to get that house rebuilt.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, with the fires here, I had a client that lost her home, lost everything. And she was having issues with the insurance company here getting paid. And the person that the properties that were available for rent at that time, they were gouging.
Yeah.
These people. I mean, it was like $3,000 a month rent
stuff. Yeah.
So again, yeah. And the insurance took forever to settle up.
So I love this word that you came up with. We hear this quite a bit.
So. I pick, dox or doxing. Someone means to obtain and publish private information about someone or a group of people in order to reveal their identity. This is generally done with malicious intent. To be doxed is to have this happen to you. In the world of cryptocurrency, fully doxed means someone's real-world identity has been revealed publicly, either through leaked personal information or deliberate sharing. This is a serious problem as many use cryptocurrencies to remain anonymous and reveal one's identity defeats the purpose of using crypto.
Yeah. So when you see, hey, I got doxed or so-and-so was doxed, and you're seeing this on Twitter especially, that's what this means, is that their identity was made public.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one thing about, you know, the cryptocurrency world is...
it's about privacy.
Yeah, about privacy. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Let me do my thing. So there you have it. So, doxed.
Well, in case you missed it...
I'm not sure you could, but just in case.
There's been some major news happening in the banking world. And it's quite significant, and we just witnessed the second largest failure of a financial institution in the United States on Friday, and that was the Silicon Valley Bank in Silicon Valley. It closed its doors. It's the second largest bank to fail since the Lehman Washington Mutual collapse of 2008, and the second bank to close after the Silvergate Bank collapse 2 weeks ago. So we're going to talk about how and why Silvergate and SVB, what we'll call it, that's for Silicon Valley Bank, both collapsed in a week. We're going to talk about the significance of the USDC stablecoins and how that's related. What you can expect if you're caught in this mess and how to protect yourself from the banking collapse. And in our opinion, whether this contagion is going to spread to the rest of the banks.
All right, Silicon Valley Bank, or as you said earlier, SVB, is a startup-focused lender, and it suddenly collapsed, left billions of dollars that belongs to companies and investors stranded and maybe lost. Imagine that. Well, it's the second largest in history. It's the single largest since 2008 when Washington Mutual went bust and kicked off the entire great financial crisis, banking collapse. Will it happen again?
I don't know. You know, how did this happen? Why did it happen? Well, look to the Fed. They have a big part in this. The Federal Reserve has been messing with the financial system constantly, and it's messing with the monetary supply, and that's the primary cause of this. The Fed causes both booms and busts. They lower the Fed funds rate, which is the borrowing rate, which causes the monetary supply to expand, and they keep it too low for too long. And the bubble gets too big, like in 2008, 2021, and then they overreact and drastically reduce the monetary supply by raising rates and crashing the whole system.
Imagine that.
And both Silvergate and SVB got caught in this, and other banks and financial institutions like insurance companies, which typically doesn't happen, could get caught into this as well.
Right. Causation equals basically a mismatch of rates. a bank like Silvergate or SVB. You can take in billions of dollars in customer deposits. And where do you put them? Mm-hmm. Into U.S. Treasury bonds, supposed to be risk-free, because the government will always pay you back, right? Mm-hmm. These U.S. Treasuries, USDTs, have different time frames from months to 30 years, and they have different rates they pay you for holding them. What happened in U.K., Silvergate, SVB, and many other, and many more, is they put the money into long-term USDTs, and as the Fed started raising rates, guess what? As the rates went up, the bond value went down. Each of these banks lost billions by holding bonds.
And just a correction, if you don't mind, those were United States Treasuries, not the USDT tether coin.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you said something on that.
Where are you going with that?
It
was a typo.
Yeah. You know, while we're reading this real quick, we have SVB and what was SBF?
Yeah.
Just saying.
So it looks like the Silicon Valley Bank got caught by more than just the Fed. It looks like either severe negligence or more likely moral hazard. And I think it's a combination of both. SVB had a gigantic investment portfolio as a percentage of total assets, which was at 57%, while the average U.S. bank is only 24%. And to make it worse, 78% of their total assets was in mortgage-backed securities. Ouch.
Yeah, big ouch.
2008, here we are again. But most importantly, they didn't hedge interest rate risk at all. And this is where the moral hazard is. They didn't adjust at all before and after the interest rate hedges, meaning Silicon Valley Bank was not applying risk management practices and exposing its investors. So the question lies is how many other institutions are operating this way?
Exactly. USDC stable tokens, what happened, and risk. As a result of the bank shutdown and future of USDC, a product of Circle and Coinbase, has become uncertain, and people are moving out of the token quickly. Can't understand it. USDC had 25% of the reserves in Silicon Valley Bank. However, they made a statement last night that they only have about 10%. Certainly no small amount at that. This caused USDC to lose its peg. It looks like it's gaining it now.
Yeah, that peg got down to 90.9. So
yeah,
to have a peg to the dollar, you're going to see it at 0.999, 0.997. And even when you start seeing that, you're going, what's going on with it? When it's at 0.90, that's a concern, and it's like what happened with UST earlier this year. And then So I'm sorry, I'm having a senior moment.
We're seniors, that's why.
With Doquan and his algorithmic stablecoin. So what can you expect if you're caught up in this mess? Well, hey, the FDIC is here to save you.
Oh, yeah, you are insured, baby, to $250,000,
right?
Don't you know?
So if you have accounts there, your FDIC insurance covers up to $250,000, which is fine for many retail clients. But the Silicon Valley Bank wasn't a retail bank. Rather, they were the Silicon Valley Bank holding most startups' money, millions and tens of millions of more. And just another word on this $250,000. It's not, say, a husband and wife. They each get $250,000.
No.
It's jointly. Even
yes.
If your accounts were separate, you share the same name, the same address, the whole bit. It's $250,000, baby, and that's it.
That's all you get.
And the FDC should start kicking in here in the next week for accounts under $250,000. But over that, they will be lucky to get anything at all. And that's where you would then take the role as the unsecured creditor. Because when you're depositing money into the bank, you are now a creditor of the bank. You're supplying a loan to the bank, and they're going to loan out your dollar like seven times.
At least seven times. Not supposed to be quite that many times, but that's what's happened.
And that's what they're going to do. So expect to hear screams for a bank bailout, and I really hope that that's not the case, because we're at a point, if you look at your fine print in your banking papers, you've signed on for a bail-in, which means some of your deposit or money will be used to help shore up the banks.
Yeah. Well, Janet Yellen said that they're not going to do that. But then my question is, too, you know, with insurance and stuff, the CEO of Silicon Valley Bank was on TV this morning and said, you know what, I'm worried about making my payroll. He wasn't worried about the people's money or the people, his customers or his clients, so to speak. He's worried about making payroll. So,
and that's important, too. I mean, if your employees are not going to show up because they're not getting paid, they need to work through this difficult time. And while the FDIC is coming through, so maybe he could have done a much better job with his messaging.
Yeah, you think that might have been important.
Because obviously that came across in an insensitive way.
Yes, it most certainly did.
Yeah.
Whether it was intended that way or not. So
we've got a little funny, just a little digression here. And it's by Abbott Costello. It was a part of their live broadcast during the 1950-54 period of time. But I think you'll enjoy it. It's funny. You'll get it. Here we go.
You gave me too much money.
Huh?
Not going to cost all this. Have you got two tens for a five? Just so happen to have it. That's it. Now,
that Elizabeth, I like her.
She's a regular scalp, that's why. That's a woman that knows her stuff. Now, let's see the baggage room. Around here somewhere.
Just a minute.
All right, what's wrong?
Just a minute. $15 went south. You gave me a lot of your fast talking.
Now, take it easy.
Have you got two tens for five? And me, like I said, I'll give you two tens for five over there.
Wait a minute. Are you accusing me of cheating?
No, but you got two tens.
Here's your five. Give me back my two tens. Now, get out.
Here's two pens. Give me a five.
Huh?
You did to me. Do it again.
Hey, Lou.
So there you go. It's just the sleight of hand, the sleight of word, and they knew it back in the 50s.
And it hasn't changed much
at
this point. So.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
So we've got a bunch of news stories.
We do.
Let's see if we can get through these. And let's see.
All right. The first one.
Powell.
Powell says wholesale digital dollar may bypass congressional approval. Imagine that. They're saying that Mr. Powell said that the wholesale central bank digital currency might bypass Congress and be issued without approval. The chair also noted that a CBDC is still years away. I don't know if I believe that. I don't think it's years away.
Well, and the reason for wholesale CBDC is for speed. It's for cross-border transfers, because on the wholesale side of things, I'm not promoting this as being good, but this is why they're doing this, is that it's for wholesale processing of payments. Now, what's the slippery slope here is if you bring it in on the wholesale side, it's going to be that much easier to bring it in on the retail
side. Yeah, exactly. And then I found this part very interesting in the article. Boston Federal Reserve announced the conclusion of Project Hamilton, a retail CBDC research project with Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, that looked into the technical feasibility of digital dollar.
And then the Federal Reserve is setting up a new squad of crypto specialists, which I think is good and not so good. Michael Farr, the Fed's vice chairman for supervision, said the central bank is trying not to stomp on crypto innovation and sees the need for stable coin controls. So they're putting together a specialized team of experts to help it supervise the crypto sector, the central bank's vice chairman had said. So here's the thing. As this whole cycle goes, first they like to ignore it, discount it, then they sue it. Okay,
right?
Then
yes.
They regulate it, try to regulate it, and then they
adopt it. Yes.
So they're fighting viciously against the tide that's moving towards a decentralized currency.
They most certainly are. Because if you listen to them, cryptocurrency is bad unless it's a CBDC.
Right. So that's where we're at.
Okay.
You want to take the crypto mining?
Yeah, crypto mining firms targeted. U.S. Treasury proposes 30% tax on electricity costs, which I found this kind of interesting. So now they're going to want to tax the miners on their electricity for cryptocurrency.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting that our U.S. Space Force Major, Jason Lowry, made a comment about this on Twitter, and he says, you know, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this. He goes, but I've decided to not remain silent because I knew that this was coming and I needed to come out and say something about it. It's like, wow.
Right.
What is this man's assignment?
I'm not sure. So within this article, you know, they go to quote, air quotes, digital asset mining also creates uncertainty and risk to local utilities and communities as mining activity is highly variable and high mobile. An excise tax on electricity usage by digital asset miners could reduce mining activity along with its associated environmental impacts and other harms. They had to throw that in there at the end. And other harms.
Right, right. I want to bring up this. Let's see if we can get this.
First question is...
Let me see if I can get this going here.
All right.
This talks about...
mining operation. First question is for...
Pardon me, you guys. This is Senator Loomis dispelling the false narrative that Bitcoin uses too much energy. So we've got a couple minutes here before the end of the first half hour. We'll see. This is 5 minutes long. We're not going to play the whole thing, but we'll see if we can find the essence of the story.
Okay.
Okay.
You want to do that after the break?
Oh, we'll do it now. Let's,
okay.
Let's go after
you
the break. Got it. Okay. Let's see.
Mr. Altenberg, what does a digital asset mining operation look like? I mean, are there shovels digging in the ground? What does it look like?
It depends where the location. Though the mining sites that are being placed that are fracked gas wells, they're essentially semi-trailers that have methane gas-powered generators that are plugged into the well and big shipping containers full of racks of Bitcoin miners.
Okay, and a Bitcoin miner is actually a computer.
Yeah, it's about the size of a toaster, and it uses three times the energy of a house.
Okay, so there is a bunch of toasters in a line. Sometimes they're dipped in fluid, so they run cooler. They can be air-cooled. They can be water-cooled. But it's basically just a computer.
Yes.
So, is that computer that's mining Bitcoin directly emitting pollutants?
No, it's energy source. It's electric source is what's emitting.
Okay. So now let's take an EV charging station. If that EV charging station is powered by electricity from natural gas or coal, shouldn't it also have the same monitoring that is being requested by this bill?
I think the issue is looking at how efficiency is measured. It's all sources of electricity, whether it's the lights or the speaker system here, are going to use electricity and produce a certain amount of work for that electricity. The issue with Bitcoin and proof-of-work cryptocurrency is the work that we are doing is not actually necessary to have cryptocurrency or to have blockchain technology.
Okay, let's talk about gold. If you're, where does gold come from?
It's mined.
It's mined. Okay. Is energy expended in producing gold?
Yes.
Okay. Is gold absolutely essential?
For certain technologies, it is.
Is it Congress's job to decide whether an energy use is worthwhile or not? I mean, surely you've heard that Bitcoin is digital gold because it is limited to 21 million Bitcoin ever to be mined. It is permissionless, which means you don't have to rely on a third party or trusted third party to do transactions in it or to hold it. It is a store of value, and that is commonly agreed to. Okay, so you've
all right. I think that kind of explains it all there. With that, we're going to take a break. We will continue this conversation when we return. You are listening to the Tokens Radio Show on KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, CN3.
Jingle from the Thule Kids.
You can play it, you can pause it, you can skip it, you can stop it with a hop. When the hopper takes over your commercial, I'll hop with the hop. We're the app for the Thule and the music kids and students with the hop. All the cats and chicks can get their kids with the hop. Let's go!
Thank you for calling BNT Satellite at 241-3474. That's 241-DISH.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley. Are you missing Newsmax? Call me because I make TV easy and I can get it back for you. My phone number is 241-3474. In case you didn't hear that, that's 530-241-3474. Or visit us at 1007 Dana Drive, Redding, California. Check us out on the internet at bpsatellite.com. Shasta County's only DISH Premier retailer. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Looking for a restaurant that offers quality and value? Look no further than Dry Creek Station on Highway 299 East in Bella Vista. Family owned and operated, Dry Creek Station has been serving up delicious steaks, seafood, chicken, soups, and salads since 1992. Don't miss their house-made clam chowder and live music Friday and Saturday nights. And be sure to ask about their fantastic weekend specials. And the menu doesn't stop there. Come check out Dry Creek Station's new lunch menu, including their fabulous burger menu. Also, grilled chicken breast, beef ribs, fish and chips, a salmon fillet, and their popular lunch special, taco salad with your choice of steak, chicken, or prawns. They also offer kids' meals. Join us at the Dry Creek Station for lunch from noon to 4 or dinner from 5 to 9. Open Tuesday through Sunday with happy hour from 3 to 5. Come on down to the Dry Creek Station at 22025 Highway 299 East of Bella Vista, where quality and value meet. Winter weather is upon us. When snow and ice and wind and rain can stir up dirt and grime on the roadways, impacting visibility and vehicle performance. so and the wash can't wait. Stop by Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading, featuring car wash packages starting at only $9. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
Welcome back. If you want to call in, our phone number here is 530-605-4567. And before we went to break, we were kind of hitting the news headlines. So here's another one. I thought this was very interesting. No internet, no problem. How to send Bitcoin by amateur radio. So let's say basically what it's saying in there is if you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have any internet, not that, you know, like, it just went down or whatever. Maybe you got shut off. Who knows? You don't have it. You can't get it. You know, maybe the government pulled the plug. But you have no idea how to get back online. Would you still be able to send your crypto? And the answer is yes. You could actually do it through the ham radio.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I just, when I came across this article, it was like, huh. So, you know, with everything that's going on with the banking system and all of that, it's not like you can always go to an ATM or whatever and get your money. So you could sidestep all that. You could still engage with cryptocurrency and still send it to people.
Yeah.
That's and help them out. So there you go. That's pretty much the gist of the whole article. But
yeah,
keep that in mind, folks.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for a long time, is that what happens if we lose the internet? We kept saying,
yeah,
it's not, if it's down all over the planet, we have got some major, major problems beyond just trying to put up a Bitcoin wallet. But this also shows that you have access. As long as you know your seed phrases, if you're lucky to have your wallet, that's fine. But if you have your seed phrases, you're golden.
You're still good.
Yeah.
So it could be a big deal. So anyway, there you go.
All right. This article was summarized by Redacted. We love them. Just love them. Surprise, President Biden unveiled a new budget last week, and that would increase aid to Ukraine and raise taxes to do so.
Huh. We don't even know what they did with the money
Ukraine,
we spent them already.
Ukraine's a sister country. The budget includes a 3.2% increase in military spending to a total of $842 billion. This includes an additional $7 billion for the military support in Ukraine and $23 billion for the Energy Department for the modernization of sea, land, and air-based nuclear weapons.
Hmm.
Yes, and so some money does go to outer space, military, or the Space Force. And they're asking for $180 million for a space tug, and that's to bring the space station to a lower orbit. And then the tax increase, we're just reversing Trump's policies. This is really what it is.
Yes.
The tax increase for the highest earners would go from 37 to 39.6%, which and the corporate rate would go back from 21 to 28%. Here we are again.
Yep.
The budget would extend Trump-era tax cuts, however, for those making less than $400,000. It's hard to fit into that box with all these other tweaks that they're doing. The budget includes an extra 15% for the IRS on top of the $80 billion that they raised, that they got last year, which I believe is being contested. So we'll see what happens. It also includes more money for Medicare and more power to negotiate drug prices for Medicaid.
Right.
It's going to have a hard time passing this.
So here's kind of a summary of those taxes. Raise capital gains from 20% to 39.6. That's the highest since 1978. Top tax rate raised from 37 to 39.6%. Corporate tax rate raised from 21 to 28. Self-employment tax tax raised from 3.8% to 5%. Increase IRS funding by 15%.
Now, honestly, how do you feel about having your self-employment tax raised from 3.8% to 5%? So, in essence, you're paying 10%.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you pay both sides.
When you're the employer. Yeah. Especially if you're, and if you employ anybody. So then we go back to beautiful California and payroll taxes. That's what hurts a lot of small businesses is they can't afford to pay all those taxes. So now you're going to raise them to the 5%. Like you say, more like 10%. So.
And there's a couple of other items here. The elimination of the tax break for crypto investors. How are they going to do that? I mean, if you buy crypto and you hold it, are they insinuating that they're going to tax you on your unrealized gains?
Gains?
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they're trying to do a lot. And if we don't pay attention, they may get away with it.
And let's see. These changes come as the United States has battled 5% plus inflation for 21 consecutive months and housing affordability is below the 2008 levels. I'd say that that is a wonderful monetary plan.
Yeah.
Hopefully you detect my snark in there.
Yeah, snarkiness there.
Yeah.
So. All right. So moving along to the next headline is the Great Green Scam. Republicans in the Senate voted to overturn a rule that allows investment managers to invest in ESGs or environmental, social, and governance funds. These funds that are branded as green and socially conscious, although they really aren't.
Right.
You know, we've talked about this on several levels. Both the House and the Senate voted to repeal rules that permit fiduciary retirement managers to consider climate change, good corporate governance, and other factors when making investments on behalf of pension plan participants. That completely perverts the idea of fiduciary, and it allows the government to choose winners and losers based on truly bogus ESG scores. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a scam that allows Washington and big business to pretend that they're socially conscious. So I'm glad that we have a balance in Congress right now that's pushing back on us.
Yeah, we have a few. I know, like North Dakota. What's her name? I'm sorry, but the governor of North Dakota, she's really pushing back.
Kristi Noem.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really pushing back on it and getting a lot of heat over it. So anyway.
Well, good for her.
Yeah.
Glad to see that. So it's hard to say what's going to happen here with this next article. The headline is Kraken is set to launch U.S. crypto bank despite regulatory shocks. Well, with what's going on with Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate, it's hard to say if this project's going to be able to move forward, but what they've done is it's a San Francisco-based cryptocurrency exchange. They're reportedly nearing the launch of its own bank in the United States a few weeks after it paid $30 million to settle SEC charges it offered unregistered securities. So we're going to see where this heads with what's gone on with SVB and Silvergate. I just don't know if this is going to move forward.
Right.
It is a Circle Coinbase relationship, let's say, with this bank, and so that might have some sort of ability to have it move forward, but we'll have to wait and see.
All right. The next headline we got is SEC dealt blow as judge clears Binance U.S. to buy bankrupt Voyager digital assets. Will this affect Ripple and Binance security case? So, Michael Wills, I guess, a bankruptcy judge in New York has favored Binance U.S. in its ruling, which would allow the exchange to finally proceed to purchase Voyager's assets. Following the current court guidelines, Voyager will go on to sell $1 billion worth of its assets to Binance cryptocurrency exchange. Now, you got to wonder with what's going on with the other banks, where that's going to lead to as well, to keep your eye on that. It may not be able to happen quite that way.
When this article came out a few days before Silicon Valley Bank went down, since the bank went down and the USDC has lost its peg, the Binance stablecoin is not being issued right now. They did stop that. So it's not that it's depegged. They're just not issuing
right.
right now. So,
that,
is it okay to move on to the
yeah,
next
let's,
one?
Yeah, let's move along.
The next story is Bitcoin, FUD, Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt, takes center stage as Uncle Sam makes a move. Well, over the last few years, the United States government has accumulated mass amounts of Bitcoin for law enforcement purposes. Okay, so get this. We don't like mining. We don't like proof of work, but we're accumulating Bitcoin.
For law enforcement purposes.
Right.
I'm not sure what that really means.
So this Bitcoin that was acquired, for the most part, has remained dormant throughout the time it was being held by the United States government. However, according to new data provided by Glassnode, this BTC has now started to move. They have 40,000 bitcoins. The amount of bitcoin which is on the move is estimated to be about 40,000 bitcoins. Yes, so I did read that correctly. Out of the aforementioned volume, 9,800 bitcoins were seized from the Silk Road hacker and have been sent to a Coinbase cluster. So the FUD begins. This behavior of the United States government has led many members of the crypto community to speculate what this could mean for Bitcoin. And many users are under the assumption that the U.S. government will be selling these Bitcoin holdings, negatively affecting the value of the cryptocurrency.
There it is. Ding, ding, ding,
in
ding,
the
ding.
Process. So there you go.
Yep.
We'll just end it right
just,
there.
Yeah.
Let's move on, folks.
Okay.
You want
Hold
to take Letitia's story?
Okay, New York Attorney General files lawsuit against KuCoin and declares ETH a security. Did I miss one?
We just talked about KuCoin, so yes, this is perfect.
Okay, where'd she go? Oh, there. Excuse me. On March 9th of this year, 2023, New York Attorney General Letitia James announced that her office had once again cracked down on crypto platforms by filing a lawsuit against the Shibels?
Crypto exchange,
KuCoin. Members of the Office of the Attorney General were able to purchase crypto assets despite the exchange not being registered in the state. In addition to the lawsuit, James and the Attorney General insist that the second largest crypto asset by market capitalization, ETH, is a security.
That is the headline right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's all of it she wrote, everybody. So moving on.
That's good enough for me.
There you go.
Not an ETH fan. Paxos did a survey, and it finds that users want to buy crypto from banks. Now, probably a couple years ago, the National Cash Register Company that provides most of the overlays for the bank's apps had crypto built in there. It was just a matter of the banking institutions to turn it on. So they've been prepared for it. So it says you've got large numbers that says the respondents likely or very likely to participate or buy crypto from their primary bank sorted by age group. And so you've got 35 to over 55 years old, they're greater than 80%. 25 to 34 years, about 67%. And then 18 to 24 is 59. So of all of the people that responded, greater than 50% overall, and this is probably averaging out to, you know, close to 80 in all when you take all age groups together.
Yeah, that's a little scary when you look at the ages that are over 80%. It's mostly 35 and up.
Yeah, and then the 55 and older group was 80%. So people want to buy cryptos at banks because they feel it's safer to buy them there.
Right.
It's not necessarily the case from that we've talked about, but hey, it's a good thing. If you want to go buy a crypto at your bank and you feel good about it, awesome, because they also want to get into the storage side of it.
Right. As long as you don't have everything betting on that horse.
Right.
Don't put everything on that horse, and you'll be okay.
And will your crypto then be a loan to the bank? Will they go out and sell fractionated pieces of your crypto? I mean, it's all hard to say. But the banks are trying to find relevance so that they're still a major player in this coming decentralized monetary system we're moving towards.
Right. Back again to the first we deny, then we accept. You know, they don't like the mining, but they don't want to be out of this equation at all.
This is a move that says, okay, now we join you.
All right. Iraq to drop dollar in trade with China. Iraq's central bank is set to allow trade with China to be settled in yen. Iraq imports from China have previously been financed in U.S. dollars, so they do not want to be pegged to us no more.
No, not at all.
And that's basically what the article is about, and yeah. What a financial downfall that is for us not to be pegged.
So you have Russia. Okay, they're sanctioned. And then you have Saudi Arabia. And then you have now
Iraq.
You have other countries that don't wish to use United States dollars. So it's no longer the granddaddy. It might still be considered the world reserve currency, but it's pecking order. It's coming down
right.
quite a bit. It's not as the gold standard as it used to be.
Right. So it's going to be harder and harder, not just for oil, but other things for us to acquire from other countries. So we need to get back to our own stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be doing that. So let's say about a year, a year and a half ago, there was some rumors that Amazon was to get into the crypto market, and they said, no, we're not doing that. Not at all. Well, this article broke about a week ago. It says Amazon's NFTs, those are non-fungible tokens, will be tied to real-world assets, and a token is possible. So your Amazon marketplace will tie digital ownership to physical goods delivered to our doors.
Wow. So, again, they didn't want nothing to do with it and everything, but guess what? They're
can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, they're getting on the gravy train too. So, and there's going to be many more to come, I'm sure, in regards to this.
It says Amazon shoppers would be able to purchase a fashion-oriented NFT tied to a pair of jeans, and pay with a credit card, just that they would with any other Amazon purchase. So the story here is that NFTs. And cryptocurrencies that are going to survive have to have a use case. And I think that you're going to start seeing more stories about mm-hmm. use cases
yes.
rather than, hey, this is the next coin. It's the next Cheddar. You know, it's going to run up, that type of thing and rug pulls. This is not what this is about. This is real, and they're going to tie real assets to it, like title. When you buy a home, you'll have your title papers, your title insurance, your homeowner's insurance.
Right.
You buy a car, your car's pink slip will be on the NFT. So there's a lot of ways to go ahead and show real-world ownership in a token and have real use case.
Right. And like you say, not be doing like the Cheddar and that thing. Because we all found out exactly whether you bought into it or not, you see what the outcome of it was.
We saw the damage.
Yeah, the total damage that happened to people because of it. So there you go. We'll move on. Shall we talk about some money?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking money, but let's talk more money.
We're probably not going to have time to finish this, but We were watching a thread by Lynn Alden, and she does a great job of narrowing down all of the BS and getting to the highlights.
And she's a very smart person.
She is, and she's very well sourced.
Yes.
So she started talking about money supply, and we're going to try to hit a few things here before the end of the show, and we just thought this was interesting. But the Silicon Valley Bank was important, and we needed to fit that in.
All right, so in 1978 and 79, the United States issued government debt denominated in Swiss francs and West German marks. The goal was to acquire foreign exchange reserves to backstop the dollar's flailing weakness. That's how vulnerable things were at that time.
These were maybe unfairly called Carter bonds. And Carter bonds were a series of United States Treasury securities that were issued in 1978 and 79 under the administration of Jimmy Carter. Unusually for Treasury securities, they were denominated in foreign currencies, namely the West German marks and Swiss francs. Mm-hmm. Their purpose was to acquire reserves of those currencies for the Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Fund and then traded them for dollars in circulation, thereby supporting the dollar and restraining inflation.
Well, Jimmy Carter then appointed Paul Volcker as a Fed chairman in 79, and he raised rates and put the U.S. economy into a recession to try to stabilize the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Do we remember Jimmy Carter days?
Oh, yeah.
It was actually pretty remarkable how much Fed independence existed at the time. By putting Volcker in there as super hawk, Carter submitted to a likely recession if it meant stabilizing the dollar, even if it negatively affected his reelection probability.
Isn't that interesting? And here's the nexus of this thread, is that continuing in the 80s under Reagan and Volcker, it was Latin America that suffered. You see, and that's the same thing that's happening now with all of the money printing we were doing over the last few years. We put all of this liquidity out there, and now we're pulling it back, and third world countries are getting hammered. And they need wheelbarrows of cash to go in and buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah. And this isn't the first time in history we've heard or seen this, right?
Yes. So they ended up consuming less oil. It left more for us, but it damaged Latin Americans. And this was called the Lost Decade. It's actually in Wikipedia. If you were to go look it up, it's the Latin American Debt Crisis. It's very interesting.
All right.
So the geopolitical politics.
Okay. During times of global scarcity, restraining inflation and in large part by getting weak buyers to stop buying so the strong can continue to buy at low prices. Wells. Can I say wells?
Yeah.
That's happening now, too. Is it right? I would say no. I would consider dollars to be non-ESG
compliant,
thank you. But that's a minority view. People like getting stuff, People like getting stuff, even if it means squashing others, especially if they don't understand what's going on.
And we're probably going to have to leave it there.
So, wow, the time's already gone.
Yes, so the basic moral of the story is that we're reducing the money supply and it's hurting other countries. And so,
and it's hurting us as well.
We'll have to say goodbye and we'll be back next week.
All right. Everybody have a great week.
Finish it out with Mr. Robert Breedlove.
Now climb aboard, y'all. This train is bound for glory. And there's plenty of room for all. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's a name I love to say. And we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be, he gave us all a protocol this world had never seen. Or Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain. Or Bitcoin, I know you're going to rain, till everybody knows, till everybody knows your name. We'll be right back. of old Mt. Gox, about traders trading altar coins and miners mining blocks. But them good old boys back in Illinois and on down to Tennessee, Steve, they don't care to be a millionaire, they're just wanting to be free. Oh, Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain, oh, Bitcoin, I know you're going to rain, till everybody knows, till everybody knows your name.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.